Hi, welcome. Let's start. We'll just take a few minutes to see if there's anything any of you would like to say, ask, whatever. So we'll just have a few minutes and see if anything emerges.
There's a question that I have. It's Pearl speaking. One of the things that I've noticed with my practice with the mindfulness of breathing is that with in between the out breath and the in breath, I seem to have this sense of anxiety waiting for the next breath. I intellectually I know that the breath is coming. But somehow there's anxiety about it, you know, when is it coming? And I don't want to force it. But there's a sense of sometimes an almost panic. It doesn't happen all the time, but there's sometimes almost a panic, you know, sort of waiting for this breath to come, the in-breath. And I wonder if you have any advice about how to deal with this and, you know, why would there be a panic, you know, having breathing all this while and yet somehow, you know, getting into this state?
Yes, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I don't know if there's a generalized why, really, but I suppose in general, because it's normally part of our auto, whatever it's called, you know, we don't have to be conscious to breathe, do we? So, you know, it's an automatic mental and physical thing. It doesn't require us to be aware of it. But when we do become aware of it, we kind of potentially introduce this kind of conflict between our ideas about breathing and how we actually breathe. You know, it's not something that really, we haven't really evolved to be aware of our breath in a conscious way, you know? So it's slightly unnatural in a sense, I think. Why it should provoke anxiety, I don't know. You'd have. I'm not sure what I can say about that that's going to be useful, really. I mean, of course, there is a sort of existential anxiety that potentially we all have, isn't it, about not taking another breath. What I'd try and do is not worry about it. And I think the truth is it's very hard to know. Once we become conscious of the breath, it's actually very hard to know whether we're interfering with it or not. Yeah. So I wouldn't necessarily kind of wait for your body to breathe if you feel you want to breathe, just breathe, you know. I would try not to, when we're asleep, interestingly enough, there is no gap between the in and out breath, yeah. When we're unconscious, the breath is sort of fluid, you know. The in breath follows on more or less immediately from the out breath, and so on. So I wouldn't necessarily. I wonder if you're sort of maybe slightly prolonging that gap between those two. When it changes from inhalation to exhalation. I mean, I suppose I'm saying maybe you're just overthinking it a little bit or, you know, getting sort of caught up in. I mean, the truth is we don't really know. As I say, once we're conscious of our breath, we probably are interfering with it. Or we can't be sure. We can never really be sure that we're not. You know, So I wouldn't worry about it, you know. To be honest, if I started feeling, if I was getting anxious about when the in-breath was going to come, I'd just breathe in, I think. I mean, I've noticed, I don't know if it's because I'm not quite sure why, but I've noticed actually these days the gap between my in-breath and out-breath is very small, you know? I'm not saying it should or shouldn't be, I don't know, but yeah, I would just try and be relaxed about it and not be, you know, not trying to be, I mean, I don't know if that's not very helpful advice. But yeah, I think it's quite a common thing that people become a bit concerned whether they're breathing properly or not, you know. I don't know if the leader's got any advice on this. Shifting,
well, again, I think it is all very personal, isn't it? I mean, I do know that for some people, I'm not saying this is for you, Pearl, it's that thing about the ego wanting to feel in charge, and once you start becoming conscious that you're breathing, then you want to control the breathing, and not knowing when it's going to come is very anxiety-provoking, isn't it? So is there something, you know, about trusting the body and trusting the breath that Paramahansa was talking about? And obviously, there may be particular health conditions and things where that's makes that difficult. I mean, I've actually got sleep apnea, and without having like oxygen and a mask at night, then I stop breathing, you know, and that's an objective fact, you know. But generally speaking, I think there's something about just surrendering and just you know, your body knows how to breathe. Your body's been breathing your whole life, and if you actually get out of the way and just let it do it, it will do it. But it's interesting, isn't it, having that response, actually. So I just sort of, you know, if it helps you to breathe, then breathe, but just be curious, maybe.
Yeah. Thank you.
I was listening to a book on the breath, and they were, you know, maybe I shouldn't say this, anyway, they were saying that a sort of ideal breath is about 5.5 second inhalation and a 5.5 second exhalation. I don't know. And with practically no real discernible gap between the two. I'm not suggesting you should try and meditate like that, but while, of course, I agree with Bodhi that our bodies know how to breathe, but also our bodies can pick up bad habits about breathing. So, you know, you could sort of separately from meditation just practice breathing. And I don't know, it might help in a way, you know.
Thanks, thank you.
It was quite a good book, actually. What was the name of the author? I'm asking. So I was talking to Bodhi Leela about it. I can never remember the name of the author. Do you remember Pranjanita? You found it.
I think it's one of those.
She's gone to sleep.
I'm here, but I can't remember the name of the.
Anyway, it was called Breathly, rediscovery of the ancient art of breathing. Anyway, we can look that up. We'll find it. I'll find it out and tell you who wrote it. Actually, I would sort of recommend it for meditators. Actually, it's quite an interesting book about the importance of breathing. Actually, and there's some quite surprising information in it. I enjoyed reading it or listening to it in my case. But, yeah. Anyway, I'll find that out and let you know what it is tomorrow. But in general, I mean, Buddhism tends to always sort of tends to say just breathe naturally, you know, and I think that, you know, that's good advice in general.
James Nestor.
James Nestor, was it?
Wow.
Yeah.
And what's it called? Breath,
the art of breathing.
Oh, I'm not sure that's the same one.
Breath, the new science of a lost art.
Oh yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Anyone else got anything they want to ask or say before we move on?
Hello, this is Natalie here.
Hello, Natalie. Hi.
I'm so grateful for all of this talk of roots. It's really made me think about the habitual prepositions we have in the story of the Bodhi tree, of being under the tree, when actually, with all of this thinking of roots, also over. Which is really wonderful.
Yeah, it's a lovely observation, yeah. It's because he's sitting on the roots of it, isn't it?
And I suppose also between, in a way.
Between, yeah. I can say it's a middle in a way, isn't it? And it's got the branches above and it's got the roots below. Trunk supporting them, although it's not easy to show him leaning up against trunk. But,
Thank you.
It's a very powerful archetypal image, the tree, I think. I mean, if you imagine, people in the Neolithic or, coming across these massive trees that they would have known for generations and generations. They must have seen some of these trees, these big trees, like these Bodhi trees, I think they can live 1,000 years or so. So, something that must have been hugely awesome for people to come across these massive ancient trees. And of course, in so many places, places like Africa, and all that, they're the gathering point, aren't they, for the village. The village will have a large tree of some sort, and their meetings and their gatherings very often go on under these trees. They are like the temples of churches, in a way, the ancient world, we've got this new place down in Somerset. What's it called? My memory. I'm going to see
now. Foxton House.
El Foxton House, yeah. Which has got this absolutely massive oak. I think it's the biggest oak I've ever seen in it. And it's obviously very, very old. And when I was down there last summer, we were doing a lot of the rituals under this oak. As the sun was going down. It's amazing because, of course, these huge oak trees, they contain so much life, you know, so much animal life. Yeah, I mean, it was very lovely doing ritual under these trees. I think they really can sort of fire the imagination, devotion away because of what they do. They do actually quite literally, in a way, convert light. I mean, through photosynthesis, don't they? They're converting light into matter. You know, so this is one. And then they're drawing up, of course, and evaporating off, aren't they, into the air. So they are sort of quite literally drawing down what's above and drawing up what's below. So they become a fantastic image for practice, really, what we're trying to do, you know, we're trying to kind of draw down, aren't we, to the light and release up what's sort of stuck in us or what's unconscious or congealed in us. We're trying to kind of release or evaporate that off in a way. So we're trying to make the fixed volatile, and the volatile fixed, which is the basic kind of slogan, it's not the right word, but it's quite often how the alchemical tradition sums up what they're trying to do. Yeah. To make the fixed volatile and the volatile fixed. So it's this exchange, isn't it? This exchange. As meditators, we're trying to do in our own body. When I say body, I mean psyche, really. I'm just equating the body of the psyche. You know, we're trying to bring into awareness what's sort of buried. And we're trying to take the sort of the qualities of light down into the darkness. It's an amazingly suggestive and activating symbol, this tree.
That's fascinating and wonderful, thank you.
So I didn't catch that.
Thank you for such a wonderful response. The idea of the tree in alchemy is something I'd love to hear more about.
I don't know if I know anymore. Sorry. Exhausted my knowledge on the subject, I think, you know, it's a lovely example of how image can be useful, you know, how we as human beings kind of respond to image. I mean, I was just going to say that a lot of people, like, I suppose, following on from Jung, you know, they sort of talk about image being the sort of language of the psyche. This could also be applied to the heart, I think, in a way. Using the heart as a kind of metaphor, you know, but this is when we go, you know, when we dream, we kind of dream in image, don't we? We don't dream in kind of cognitive, with the cognitive part of us, do we? The psyche seems to be a place of image, really. That's its natural language, communicating image. So therefore, images communicate to the sort of unconscious part of us, I think. And hence are very valuable when we're trying to do this sort of work, you know, sort of way of
Thank you.
Okie dokie, is that it from everyone? Speak now. Okay. Let's get ourselves comfortable. We'll do something a little bit different this afternoon. We'll do a quick six element practice. So you can just listen to what I'm saying. I'm not going to be giving you instructions really. So, well, I will give you a few instructions, but more just trying to evoke or you see. Okay, so get yourselves comfortable. So as Bodhi leaders mentioned in Buddhism, added to the normal four elements of earth, water, fire, and air, it also has space and consciousness. So it has six elements. And in the six element practice, if you haven't done it before, we bring to mind the element. So we start with earth. So earth stands for everything with kind of solidity and some kind of stability. So it's not just the soil, it's anything really that's got resistance. So all your furniture and all the earth, anything that's kind of got weight and resistance and some kind of integrity as a substance, as it were. So what we do in the practice is we bring the element to mind as it occurs in the world, then we bring the element to mind as it occurs in our own bodies, and we recognize then it's the same element. So to start with, let's just find our breath and just notice. So we're just using the breath as always, just to give a little bit of stability. So we kind of gather ourselves around our breath, we could say. Particularly our sort of disparate mind, if it is that disparate. And your face relax. But first of all, we're just going to bring to mind the element earth as it occurs in the world. As I say, this will include your house, ground under you, cars in the street, trees and the plants all have a large amount of earth. Gives them structure and shape. So human world in this sense is like largely made up of this element Earth. Materials our houses are made from are usually extracted from the earth in some ways. The bricks and the glass and the metals and the wood will come from the earth. Our clothes, our possessions. Made up of something with a relatively stable form, some resistance. Very relaxed. It's just a sort of playful remembering of the element Earth as it appears in the world. We live in a material world. We don't have to think of everything. It's just more of getting a feel, a sort of feeling for this element. The hills and the rocks, the trees, man-made things. Plants and the animals all exist, at least in part, because of this earth element. And we can turn towards our own bodies. Notice that in our body we have things that are resistant, have weight, have a particular form and solidity, albeit temporary. You can feel into these, your teeth, your nails, your skin, your bones, your muscle, your hair. All of these participate in this idea of the earth element. Reflect that the element Earth that makes us up is not discontinuous from the element Earth that makes up the rest of the world. The same element. In order for us to maintain this element Earth as it manifests as our body, we of course have to take in food, nourishment, actually, if we stopped supporting the element Earth in this way in our own bodies, after not too long, we would cease to exist or die. And when we do die, this element earth makes us up, will return to the element earth outside of us. So next we consider the element water, first remembering how this element manifests in the world outside of us, in the seas, in the lakes, in the rivers, in the grasses, in the snow, in the spring, in our own kitchen, bathroom, out of the tap, all the ways in which this fluid element appears in the world. Mist and the dew, the element water stands for all things fluid. All things that take on the shape of whatever they're contained in, be it the ocean or a river, if we can establish kind of feeling for this element. Which a map leaves the elements onto our own body, we're kind of moving up from the base. Once we feel we've established some sense of this element outside of us, we reflect that we ourselves also possess this element, constituted by this element. just reflect on the fluids that make up our own body. Saliva in your mouth. Moistness of your eyes. Blood circling throughout your whole body. Of course, the multitude of other fluids in the body, fluids in the joints. Digestive system, and so on. Knowing that in order to maintain this water element in ourselves, we actually have to take on fluid pretty regularly, multiple times a day. But knowing that the water element outside of you, not different from the water element inside of you. And if you were to stop taking on this element, it wouldn't last very long at all, would you? Just a few days. You begin to dehydrate. When you do die, this element that makes up you will return to the great element, water. Actually, it's always just passing through you anyway. All these elements, even the earth element, are just slowly passing through our body, aren't they? Come from outside, make up our body for a short time and go back into the world. Having considered the water element, you move on to the element of fire. Fire represents all heat, really. Not just literal fire, but anything that has the property of warmth. Obviously, this comes from the sun. Occurs volcanic action, actual fires, flames, and just having a sense of how this element fire manifests in the world. having established some sense of this element as it occurs externally, just consider for a moment how it occurs internally as warmth in our own body. As mammals, of course, we have to keep up our body temperature, and actually go to quite long lengths to maintain our body temperature, don't we? Making sure we eat, making sure we clothe ourselves, heat our houses. It's really quite a volatile element. It doesn't hang around very long, does it? Always radiating heat. Leaving our bodies nearly as fast as we make them. As with all these elements, it's really just passing through us, isn't it? Just sort of on loan. You can't really claim it as ours. Of course, when we do die, the heat soon leaves our body and returns to the world. Fourthly, we have the element air. Really, you just need to be aware of breathing in and out, and then you've got a direct experience of how that element air that exists in the world around you comes in and leaves your body. There's sort of a few sort of seconds in between, isn't it? Breathe in the air of the world, the great element air into our body. Incorporated into our white blood cells, I think it is, taken around. Nourishes every cell in our body and release back out into the world. We are quite literally breathing in and out this element. As with all these elements, we can't really find a fixed self. We can't find ourselves in it, can we? It's just passing through, as it were. the additional four elements, and we have a slightly more esoteric elements of space and consciousness. So we'll start with space. So we can just have a sense of the space around us in the room. Space outside. Without space, it's hard to imagine anything existing. Everything seems to need space to exist in. Our bodies take up a space in the world, us-shaped space. And we have a sort of internal space within our bodies. Quite a lot of space in the body. Is the space in the body any different from the space outside of the body? Is it all participate in what we're calling the element of space? I also consider that our kind of lives take up a particular space. And our possessions, our houses, our cars, our belongings. Some people have to hire storage space, don't they? Because their lives take up more space than they're readily available. Things that they kind of identify with. We all identify to some extent or other with what we possess. Possessions to some extent an extension of our own self. Take up space in the world. Because when we do die, all this space that's taken up by us goes back into the general store of space, as it were. Somebody else will live in our house. Our belongings will be given away or go to landfill or charity shop. Friends, so on and so forth. Sixth and last of the elements, consciousness, a little bit more tricky, really. You kind of know by extension and imagination that other people, animals, maybe even in some way that we don't understand, all living things have some kind of consciousness, certainly animals and people. according to Buddhism, consciousness isn't just a materialistic phenomena. It kind of exists. Existence itself, kind of an element within existence. This is with all the other elements. We're just kind of participating, we're just borrowing it for a short while. Make our lives as with the other earth, water, fire, air, space. Famous consciousness. Not really ours. There's no enduring self to be found in any of these elements. Even though together they seem to account for us entirely. We're made of these six elements, these symbolically. None of these six elements we find a fixed us or self. The phenomena of consciousness comes and goes with incredible rapidity. Sometimes thoughts go so quickly and barely catch them. So this meditation is traditionally done as an antidote to clinging. So what it's trying to encourage us to do is not to cling. Because everything about us is simply borrowed from the world and will return to the world. Nothing lost, nothing gained really, it just changes. Everything that makes you up will go on to make up countless other living things. Continue to exist in the cosmos, but not as you. So as sooner or later we'll have to give up all these elements. May we learn to sit loosely with them in our lives. Maybe recognize the transitory, insubstantial nature of these elements and of ourselves. Stop clinging. We'll find ourselves free from suffering and anxiety. Without fear. just before we finish, wishing yourself well. Wishing one another well. May we all learn to relax into the essential nature of being without fear. Okay, thank you. So we'll leave it there for today. Hope you all have a good evening. There will be another class you can go to at 7 if you want to keep me company. But anyway.